Hi, I'm Graham Lasso, and you're listening to Eat, Sleep, Chelsea Repeat with Chris, Craig, and Brady.
Welcome to the Eat, Sleep, Chelsea Repeat pod. The headline this week, Chelsea exact revenge on Fulham. Today I'm joined by my brother Craig and our good friend Brady. Guys, it's been a good couple of outcomes, I'll say, for the last two games. How are we feeling?
Well, I think you might need to explain the pun today. The Chelsea exact revenge on Fulham.
I can explain the pun, yeah, because if we take our minds back to last year, and when we played Fulham in the earlier part of the season, we were 1-0 up, and Fulham scored two goals very late on, and we've basically done exactly the same thing to them. In fact, the timings of the goals were pretty much carbon copies.
They were exactly the same.
And their one was Boxing Day, and ours was Easter Sunday, so we won Easter, they won Christmas, one each.
Wow.
One each.
That's the sign of a good pun, isn't it? When you've got to explain it in detail.
Multi-level pun there.
Yeah. So Fantastic. There you go. That's the headline.
I think the headline is Chelsea win away, right?
Yeah, that should be the headline. That is a rare sighting. Right, let's dive into it. Let's talk about Chelsea's win. All right, so. Obviously, Iwobi gave Fulham the lead, and Tyrique George and Pedro Neto for Chelsea made it 2-1, 0.9 expected goals for Chelsea, 0.3 for Fulham, in terms of sort of some of the basic stats. So 60% possession for Chelsea, 85% pass accuracy, 7 shots on target out of 13, and no saves for Sanchez from Fulham's 1 shot on target, which obviously was the goal. All right, let's do likes and dislikes. I will come to you first, Brady.
My like is, it's not going to be a surprise for people in this podcast, my like is Cobham. Just love Cobham, man. Just hits different. That goal, I was going pretty catatonic to both goals. I was watching it at home, probably. I was wondering if my neighbours were going to get the call to police. But the first one, I was really going crazy because it, you know, until then, we were very toothless in the game. And for him to just step up and do that, I mean, what a finish. And so, I mean, and obviously there's a lot of celebrations afterwards, but like Cole, Will and Chalobah's celebrations, it just means a bit more to them, a little bit. It just, not necessarily means more, it's just a different energy to it. And I just love Cobham. I just love that, you know, we've got one of the best academy in the world at our club. And yeah, they just keep feeding through really good talent. And I've been saying for a while that Tyrique George is a bit raw, he can be a bit greedy. But I don't mind him being greedy if he scores goals like that. And he took a risk and he scored. I mean, he didn't, rather, I mean, he obviously would have shaped to shoot, but he didn't lay it off or just whacked it. And then he went in, just took a chance. And yeah, he was the hero, really.
What do you think, Craig?
Yeah, I mean, I know Brady loves his Cobham.
Can we Cobham, say on the pod, they call them Cobham sexuals, basically. That's what they call them.
Brady is a borderline Cobham sexual. But obviously, Brady says it hits different. It is a nice feeling for sure to have players come through the academy, succeed, you know, especially, the really young players that come in and have been on the periphery of the squad. You know, Tyrique George hasn't started a league game. He's only come on as a sub a few times. To come on and get such an important goal, such a clinical moment, and a great goal as well. You know, it wasn't a tap-in like he scored against Legia Warsaw or whatever. It was a really, really good goal. And a goal that maybe Nicholas Jackson couldn't score, which we'll come on to later, potentially. But yeah, just really happy for him. And yeah, happy for fans like Brady, who really especially enjoy the Cobham players scoring.
My like in this one is Chelsea winning away for the first time since when?
Tottenham away.
Was it?
When was that?
Tottenham away, well, it was December sometime, though.
It was the 8th of December.
Yeah, first win this year.
Where were you?
I was watching the game at home.
That was 5 months ago or something like that.
That was a Jadon Sancho smash,
wasn't it? Yeah, it was a 4-3, yeah. We've had some scary away games since then. We haven't picked up a win. Everton, Ipswich, Palace,
Brentford,
Man City, Brighton, Aston Villa. For goodness sake, some of these are horrific, aren't they? Arsenal, obviously.
I think it was our first away win in nine.
Yeah, mad. But yeah, really happy with to win away. It's a good feeling. Well done to the travelling supporters who made it all the way there across West London. But finally, their patience has given in to a victory. So yeah, nice feeling. So that would be my like.
My like is we are now more likely than not to make the Champions League places by our implied probability of 58% to make the top five after that win. So we're back into the more likely than not to make the Champions League. How do we feel about that?
Feel like it's always on a knife edge, isn't it? I mean, we're a game away from that going south. So but the games, I think, at the end of the season, where we're playing Newcastle and Forest, who are direct competitions, it's all about getting yourself in a position where you're still in the mix for those games. And they're going to be the crunch matches.
I mean, yeah, we have like a Conference League problem. We'll probably get into the Conference League final, you would assume, but those are actually finals. You can't get finals really, obviously, in the league format, but it doesn't come any bigger than Newcastle away and Forest away. So we've got to get in a position where those games actually matter from a point standing. We've got to get points from the three games around that, but those games are massive. There can be 6-point swings twice. I mean, if we win that or don't lose them and win the others, we'll be there. So massive games.
All right, let's cover around the dislikes, Brady.
I mean, my dislikes is quite funny. The first half of the season, we were rubbish in the second half, and now we're rubbish in the first half. I mean, we've scored one goal in the last 10 first halves of all competitions. It's crazy. 450 minutes for the Mass Wizards in there listening to the pod. Yeah, I mean, we're 4-0 down in our last four Premier League matches at half time. This is tough. I mean, even in the Ipswich game, you know, they came back and scored two goals, just gave themselves too much to do a little bit. And the first, I mean, there's a lot of first half-time subs at the moment. And Maresca often says it's planned. I think he said he planned to bring Reece James off, etc. But there's a lot of half-time subs at the moment, which can go either way. Maybe that the manager's planning to do it, or he's having to kind of reshuffle the pack and think again. So first halves have been poor, though, for a while. And it's very odd, because before it was, we were starting games well, but then kind of dying off a bit, and maybe the manager not making enough subs or whatever. And now it's completely flipped. So, yeah, it's very unusual. But, yeah, it's a trend that's been developing for a while.
I'm going to go ahead and throw out some stats for you on that, because I thought you were going to mention the first half. So Aston Villa away, first half, 1.53 XG versus 0.8. So Southampton at home, first half, 1.54 XG versus 0.2.
Those two games are not included in the 10, by the way, for what it's worth.
Leicester at home, first half, 1.24 XG, and only 0.5 in the second half. We won 1-0 in that game. So I do think the first half, so those are obviously...
The stats you give me there are just one good half versus Leicester, Craig. I mean, that doesn't really back up your point, to be honest. I mean, the others are from the last...
That was the 10 league games. Sorry, are you including the Conference
League? Yeah, the Conference League as well. I mean, the Conference League is, you know, really, that should be included, because we should be even more scoring in the first half than those games. We have two games versus Copenhagen and one versus Legia Warsaw, where we didn't score in the first half.
That Copenhagen game is before the Leicester game. But yeah, if you want to set from a set period, obviously that Copenhagen game.
Last 10 games of first half, the last one from Fulham back to, I think it was the one after Southampton, it's 450 minutes, score one goal. It's not great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that is poor.
I mean, you can throw the XG stats all you want, but it's not scoring enough goals in the first half. And when you don't, especially the way teams set up versus us, if they go low block and we haven't scored by half time, the crowd gets restless, you know, home or away. Maybe the players get a bit edgy. It'd be really good if we got some early goals and then the teams have to come out and then we can expose them. But the way
games like Ipswich, obviously, you know, we've got over one XG in the first half and they've got 0.6 and we go in 2-0 down. But, you know, there is obviously some element of chance. And
missed the penalty, right? That was the penalty.
No, Palmer. Not the Ipswich game, sorry. Palmer was the Southampton game.
You can have other examples where in the Brentford game we got 0.3 XG in the first half, and in this game the it was a tight game, fair enough, but we got 0.17 XG. I mean, Fulham got nothing either. But
yeah, I mean, that was one of the other points I was going to bring up, is that we have got a lot of control in these games, and it's something the fans don't really like to hear. I mean, I guess we'll move on to my dislike as well, which is the disconnect at the moment a little bit between the fan base and the manager and the style of play and sort of the negativity that surrounds, you know, obviously at halftime everyone's wanting to get on top of the team, even though, you know, at halftime I think we spoke about it briefly in the WhatsApp group. I thought we controlled Fulham really well. Got a couple of stats for you from this game. That's the second worst XG Marco Silva's ever put up at home in a Premier League game. So we really restricted Fulham, who are a very good side, especially at home, to basically nothing. Chelsea last season conceded 63 goals with basically the same personnel. You know, we haven't improved or made any additions to our back line in the...
Well, Disasi's not here, is he?
We've lost Disasi, yeah. But we haven't added anyone, you know, that's come in and, you know, shored us up, for example. But we conceded 63 goals last season. At the moment, we've conceded 40, which is 23 less. Obviously, 5 games still to go. But barring a historic defensive collapse over the next 5 games, we won't be conceding anywhere near 63 goals. And that's all while still having the third highest XG in the Premier League. So I do think we've got quite good balance in our play. Yes, we're not all out attack. Yes, we're not conceding like a million chances. And you referring to those sort of low XG first halves for both teams, by the way, you know, there's no team that's put up tons of XG against us, no team that's created tons of chances against us. Even if you look at Aston Villa, who rolled over Newcastle at home pretty easily in their last game, they didn't create tons of chances against us at all, especially not in the first half. So I think we've controlled games very well. Obviously, there is an element of balance. I think the home games against the poorer teams, we could do a little bit more in terms of committing players forward, and sort of looking to not be as balanced and as controlled and as structured as maybe we have been. But I do think some of the criticism is really, really unfair for what the style of play. And fair enough, people don't like certain styles of play, but for what we're doing, I think we're doing it, you know, fairly well.
That nicely comes on to my dislike, which was not quite the same as Brady's, but definitely the shift of intensity in the team from the first half to the second half, which I think is a problem. And we talk about style of play and post and XG and all that stuff. A lot of the time it's the same people just working a bit harder. And that's one of the issues I think we're suffering from with Maresca, is it is very robotic and there doesn't seem to be a lot of intensity, and it's almost it has to come out of the last second.
I don't agree with that. I think we were really intentional. I mean, so
but that's because we were losing Fulham. The game. Where was that?
I think
half?
Even in the first half, I think restricting Fulham at home to 0.2 XG is an amazing accomplishment.
We did that in the second half as well and created loads of chances.
Sure. Well, we didn't create loads of chances.
Well, it can be done, can't it?
I don't think called a team intense in the first half. I mean, they did restrict Fulham to... I mean, the game was just not a great game, but it was a tight game, like you said, but you can't say the team was intense. I thought they were a bit languid at times, quite slow.
In the second half. Moving the ball from defence to midfield to the wingers felt like it was taking an age. In the second half, it was so much quicker.
I agree.
They made some tactical adjustments as well, but isn't that like an impressive thing for a manager at half time to get a team playing better for the second half? Wasn't that one of the criticisms?
To go back to Brady's point, it can't keep happening.
You could look at it another way. They've got a week on the training pitch and are coming out first half stinking a gaff up. I mean, you can look at it both.
There's a difference between like the game being tight and stinking the gaff up. I completely disagree that they came out and stinking.
Well, I'm just saying that there's, if you get one goal in one, in, you know, four, nearly. 450 minutes from with our attack, it's not good enough.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very, very small sample.
I mean, look, if you look at the first sort of
10 games,
and it's also a sample of games that include four games out of the 10 against with complete backup players, one of which the games were 3-0 up from the first leg. I mean,
yeah, but
it's not an apples to apples comparison, is it? It's not fair.
Ironically, you scored in that.
If you look at the first 20 minutes of the game, I know Fulham scored an offside goal. They also had a few sort of opportunities which didn't obviously convert to XG because they weren't quite there.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's the way the goal gets conceded as well. You can sit slow on the ball, dilly-dallying. I mean, the captain, Reece James, he's just walking about in central midfield and two people are around him and he gets the ball and they score and you're thinking, is this a team that's really up for this game? Yeah. Second half, I don't think that would have ever happened, and it didn't, obviously. But they're so much quicker moving the ball, because they had to, because they were losing. And I feel like it's a common theme with the team, a bit like the Ipswich game, exactly the same. Slow, second half, suddenly they need to score two goals. Suddenly the intensity's up, and they can't keep waiting around for it.
I do think this is also symptomatic of a young team. This happened under Poch as well, where we went in front and we were struggling to be in front. This team seemed to sort of revel in the fact of being the underdog a little bit and coming back. And obviously in this game, they didn't really have any time to sort of, you know, for Fulham to equalise. But it has been a process of, I don't know, young players, just they just struggle to kind of structure the game a little bit. So it could be that as well. But I mean, yeah, I'm just pointing out the first half recently in terms of goals scored. And I think general performance, there has been a bit of a dip off.
Let's look at the players. Let's do temps.
Time to see whose form's on top, who's heating up, whose temperature's dropped, who's been playing well and who's not. It's freezing, warming up, boiling hot.
Brady, you've earned the right. Go first.
Well, I think it's going to be a player that we're all going to... it's a player that, you know, I reluctantly put in. I don't think I've put him in for a while.
It can be pretty... Neto again.
No, it's not Neto. Well, no, he just scored quite a good goal. So I'll leave him out. I'll leave him out this week. Just evaded it. Just evaded it.
Do you know Brady really likes Neto?
He's actually shouting at Neto halfway through the second half yesterday because he did a couple of... He missed that massive...
He was very close to the freezer.
He missed our big chance, yeah.
He missed a massive chance and he did another P-roller and I was like, oh, God. And then he just, you know, got that goal. Anyway, we'll talk about Neto later. It's Nick Jackson. I've spoken about a lot about aggression in Chelsea recently. Use that word a lot. And you're starting to see a player who looks more like the raw player under Pochettino in the first half of the Pochettino season. He's just regressing. He hasn't got a goal. Premier League, I went over 800 minutes. He's only got two assists in that time. I mean, his numbers are very good before that. So he's still got goal assist under 150 minutes in the league, which is fine. But it's a little bit like symptomatic of Chelsea. Started really fast and then just sort of regressed a little bit. But also his link-up play isn't there. The pressing is still good, but not quite what it was. Obviously, he's come back from a two-month injury. And they threw him straight in against, but they played him straight away, starting him against Spurs, which is quite a high-intensity game and an emotional game, so maybe that took a bit out of him. But yeah, he looks a shadow of the player he was in the first half of the season. And yeah, I mean, when Nick Jackson plays badly, and it looks terrible, let's be honest, it looks like Werner-like, you know, from the Werner days. So yeah, it's bad. He was awful. And he should have been hooked way before he was. He was ineffective from the half an hour point, really. And there was a moment where Neto, put a really good ball in and he just didn't have the belief to go and score it. And yes, worrying, to be honest. I mean, we still, you know, Maresca said himself that we need Palmer and Jackson to fire if we're going to make Champions League. And at that moment, he doesn't look anything like fire. So yeah, easy freezer.
Speaking to you a bit more in a macro sense, Brady, I know you were quite high on Nicholas Jackson potentially, you know, having a season of development and becoming, you know, a much better striker, and potentially we wouldn't need to sign a striker. Is that still where your head's at, or do
you? No, I mean, I've actually thinking about this. I think there's two ways you can look at it. I mean, we're linked with mainly young strikers. I think the three strikers we're linked with, if I'm not mistaken, are Dilap, Benjamin Sesko, and Gokeres. And is there anyone else?
And Osimhen, I think. I think
Osimhen and the wages are going to be too much. But anyway, because obviously Osimhen would be a massive get. But
he's in the mix anyway, I think.
I think maybe more likely to go just how leave his wages, but we'll see. I think the idea would be, yeah, when maybe back in November when Jackson was firing, it would be Jackson number one and you bring someone in like a Delap to be like a number two. I think you're looking more now where you go for a, well, whether you see Šeško or Gokarezu. Gokarezu has got 40 goals this season. You know, and amazing stats. And she's got more assists than Jackson. You might be looking at getting a striker in and Nick Jackson going to a backup striker, which arguably he was bought to be. Well, not arguably, I think he was. So my mind is changing a little bit. I mean, he's a different player from the first half of the season. I mean, I remember he scored against Leicester. It's that instinctive finish with the outside of his foot. He just looks a completely different player. And when players are aggressing, you know, opinions change. And at the moment, yeah, I wouldn't really back Nick Jackson to be the number one nine going forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be absolutely egregious to not sign a striker and leave Nicholas Jackson up there next season, I think.
I think we will. I think we all sign a striker, but it's whether you absolutely go for whether we sign a Delap, who probably would be a bit more of a backup, probably. Or you go for someone a bit more higher profile, maybe a bit higher wages, and demote Jackson. So I'm not sure.
I mean, I'm Jackson out. He can't. I don't think he should be at the club next season. That's where I'm at with him.
I do wonder with his personality whether he is a suited to a backup role. He seems he's very emotional, I'm not sure he's going to sit.
I think it actually might help him because he has probably played way too many minutes than he was supposed to, right? I mean, you could go either way, but the issue with Jackson is when so many teams, the kryptonite to Chelsea is obviously a low block, and versus low blocks he's very ineffective. Versus a mid or a higher block, obviously he's way more effective. Like in a game against Liverpool, obviously they're probably one of them won the league by then. But I'd always back Jackson weirdly against Liverpool because they're high line, or a Tottenham obviously, or a City. But yeah, versus Everton on Saturday, I mean, I'm almost thinking just play Ty George, to be honest.
Any credit to Maresca from you, Brady, for having Tyreek George on the bench ahead of Christopher Nkunku, who wasn't even on the bench, just a tactical decision, no injury. He selected George ahead of Nkunku on the bench.
I mean, I saw Nkunku live on Thursday, and I have to say that he wasn't good. And it's pretty clear that Nkunku is just going to be out of the club. I've said, even when I was kind of much higher on Nkunku, I never liked him at nine. I just thought he could play 10 or left 10 a bit more. Or he plays that kind of weird kind of second striker, a bit like Havertz. Like you said, it doesn't really exist. But yeah, I mean, George does pretty well in the line. Neto's done well in the line. I mean, yeah, like I said, you're almost thinking to start Ty George at nine on Saturday. Could be an idea. And I mean,
it is kind of scary that is actually true, I think.
So that's actually...
What do you think, Chris?
I think, what about having Tyreek George on the bench and Nkunku?
But no. Also, like, the potential of George starting ahead of Jackson.
It's tough because obviously what you do get with Jackson is his work rate. Well, if Tyreek George is that good at pressing. I mean, the only thing Jackson was doing was just, he's like a dog yesterday, he was just running around after the ball. He wasn't actually doing anything helpful.
There was a couple of moments as well where he received crosses low. There's one in the first half where he miscontrols the ball, like in a spot where another striker could actually create a good chance from that if he controls it, yeah. You know?
Well, I think Neto, obviously putting Neto there is probably better, but then you lose him on the wing, and I think that is a big loss because then you've got to start.
Then you can play Maddox. I guess it's like you play Neto, Sancho, and Tyreek George, or you play Madueke, Neto, and Sancho. Mm. So that's the kind of trade off you've got to think about. Because
you could put Palmer on the right.
This is academic. You definitely would not drop Jackson, by the way. I mean, he loves Jackson. He just loves him. He just loves the pressing. And I'm not sure how much Everton play out from the back. I mean, obviously, traditionally, a Moyes team will probably be booting it. But these days, they might be playing out from the back. And he is extremely good at winning turnovers, like Palmer. So, which is kind of all they're both good at the moment, to be quite frank. Yeah, but he's regressing heavily. So, my mind is changing on him a bit, yeah. No doubt.
Okay. All right, let me do my freezer. And it's Nons. Noni Madueke, hooked at half time for being as bad as anyone I've seen play for the club. The problem that we've got with Madueke is he's not good enough to play in the Premier League against anyone who's fairly decent at left back. And that's a big problem. And Robinson at left back, was it Robinson?
Yeah.
He couldn't believe his luck. He could have had a deck chair out there. Absolute rubbish. At one point, Madueke tried to just run past him. That was a waste of time. I think the problem at that point is he knows he can't do anything. And then he, you know, he just doesn't do anything. And his aimless crossing with his right foot is unreal. Like, how bad it is. I don't understand. Like, if you watch Neto when he's crossing, it looks like he's aiming for someone. Madueke just does the same sort of low cross with his right foot, like just where the goalie can get it. I'm sick to death of it. He can't be
a harsh freezer.
He can't be at the club next season. This guy, sorry, he's not good enough.
Brady, you're a big Nons fan. What are you saying?
I think it's a little bit harsh. I mean, the caveat would be that. That cross that Jackson messed up was a Madueke cross. It was poor yesterday, though. And Madueke, on Thursday, when we watched the game live, he just walked straight down the tunnel against Legia Warsaw, and that's nothing to do with his performance against Fulham. But
I forgot about that. You didn't like that, did you?
I didn't like that at all. Especially in a game like that, he just literally didn't even clap straight off. And he does stupid stuff like that a lot, which kind of, obviously, when you're looking at positives and negatives, that draws up into the negative column. Especially on a night like that, where you know you've lost against Legia Warsaw at home, where Chris James had to tell the players to clap the flams. But yeah, he was poor yesterday. And look, he's up and down. Sometimes he can do something that looks really good, and sometimes Chris is right. He, you know, the left back's got a deck chair out, and obviously Robinson's probably the form left back with Kirkez in the league this year. Maybe with a couple of others, but they're both linked to Liverpool to replace Andy Robertson. But yeah, so they're up against a very good player. But yeah, he was poor. And I think at the moment, you probably versus Everton want to play Neto right wing, which obviously is his preferred position anyway, and maybe Sancho left wing or something like that. Or yeah, but yeah, I mean, Madueke was poor. He has got, you know, he's got 7 goals this year, 3 assists in the league in 1600 minutes. Good return. But it does come at a price of some poor performances. And in a way, Chris is right in that sense. And I have to wait and see. I mean, I know, Craig, you talk about him having quite a high value. It's probably worth, say, what would you value Noni Madueke at the moment in the market?
I think it's going down and down, unfortunately. But, you know, I'd be shocked if it in today's market, if it's less than 40 million.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, that Newcastle's name has been linked. If they come with a 45 million bid, and obviously you've got Estevao Willian coming in, Neto can play right wing anyway. Looks like we're going to buy a right-footed left winger. So you can maybe have Estevao, Willian and Neto on one side, and you get 45 million maybe to pay for a better striker. It is tempting. But I think there is a player there. He is very good at getting from the byline to the box. But like Chris says, when he gets to the box, he isn't good enough. So unless he improves his productivity and, you know, sometimes his attitude, then maybe it might be better for him to move on, but I'm not sure.
I don't think he's got the creativity to be a good winger.
He is like world class at getting from this isn't really a world class attribute, for getting from the touchline to the edge of the box. He's unbelievable there. He can drive players back amazingly well. Because when he gets there, he just the cutback, and then just kind of dribbles it into the box. So I agree with his right foot. And oftentimes when he does a left foot inverted cross, it's either hits the front man or he's not picking the right moment. Yeah. I don't know.
I don't think he gets a kick out of assisting. Like, no, I think him putting like an amazing cross in for someone to hit it in, I think
him and Palmer are the same. They're very greedy. I mean, they love scoring, and that can go both ways. But like,
I think the problem is he's got the ego of like Ronaldo. It's just like, no, not for me.
We have a lot of players. I think their hero is Ronaldo, and that can be a blessing or, you know, a curse, but I don't know. It depends on where you look at it.
Craig.
Yeah, it's a sad day because I'm going to call out my boy. I love this player, but it's not working in midfield or in inverted at the moment. He's not maybe got the legs. I want to say I'm happy that he's actually played, you know, he played 90 in back-to-back games, but Reece James, is it's not obviously not just the error for the goal. I don't like blaming players for giving the ball away when goals come from it, because it's not always, you know.
You hear that, Robert Sanchez? You hear that?
Lots of players give the ball away.
But, leave Rob alone. He had a good game.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
Rob leave Sanchez, him alone. I think he had three or four
on target, one goal.
Leave him alone.
Craig doesn't blame you, Robert Sanchez.
One goal for Fulham, so it's he did his best, I guess. But yeah, no, I just don't. I don't think Reece James is a midfielder. I think he can play this inverted role. Okay, he's not playing. He's a bit half masked at the moment, Reece. And he has had some good games since he's come back. Obviously, he hasn't been injured now for almost five months now, which is great. But and they have been managing his minutes. Obviously, Maresca talked again in the presser about that. For people that don't understand the selection things, he again mentioned it after in the post match from Fulham in the press conference about how they're managing James's minutes. And this is the first time he's played 90 and then started the next game, which is great. But yeah, he probably needs, you know, a bit of settling in terms of continuous games and playing to get more familiar with this role. When we first hired Maresca, I thought ideal for Reece James. One of my first thoughts when they talked about the setup and how he inverted into midfield, and you know, James has obviously played there at Wigan and he's got great range of passing and stuff. I thought, oh, it's perfect for midfield. But A, he looks a bit lost in there, and B, he just doesn't have the legs to play midfield, I don't think. Not at the moment. And that's not saying that he won't ever get that back, but it's just not there at the moment. And yeah, you could probably say that's an issue as well for right back bombing up and down, but you know, we'll see about his fitness going forward. But it's not working for him at the moment, Reece. He's not the influential Reece James that we knew before.
He seems lethargic. It looks like he's injured constantly. He almost looks like he's just trying to get rid of the ball. He doesn't want it back. You know, if you think about some of the best progressive passes from deep that we've seen in the Premier League in that position, even like Lampard at the back end of his career at Chelsea, he's a million miles away from being as influential as that. I mean, he's basically Danny Drinkwater. That's who he's become. Oof. Come just on, walk, on, walking about.
That's ridiculous.
Sideways, backwards. Nothing.
I put him in the freezer risky for this game. Yeah,
yeah, but this what I'm talking about. In this game, he was so bad, and it was like having Danny Drinkwater out there. And he was hooked at half time. And I tell you what, Gusto made a big difference. So he needs to sort his life out, Reece James, big time.
Well, I mean, one thing I will say with the selection is I found it odd he was played 90 on Thursday and then played this game. Why wouldn't you just, because he looked lethargic in this game, why wouldn't you play him 60, 70 if you're planning to play him in this game? I mean, they said the plan was to take him off at half time. I don't think that's a great idea to be like, you know, chopping and changing your captain off at half time. I don't think that's a very good idea. And he was poor in this game, but there's still moments of magic. He did the classic Reece James chested down, and he kind of did like a half volley cross ball to Neto, like 70 yards. It was amazing. He's still got it. He's still got like elite abilities. But yeah, the physical, you know, it's a little bit like back in the day. I remember Damien Duff was like, he got that really bad injury. He never quite looked the same. And I mean,
I do think Reece is playing at the moment like he doesn't want to get injured.
Yeah, I mean, Timber got that terrible injury, didn't he? But then that's why Timber's been so good, because it doesn't look like he's had a terrible injury, right? He just looks like he's just come back into it.
Do you remember like Essien when he came back from his injury?
Yeah.
It's like that. He's just bottling it. He just doesn't want to be involved.
I also think it's because he's the captain. He doesn't want to let the team down. Yeah. I'm not saying you take the captaincy off him at all, because I don't see any other viable captain at Chelsea at all at the moment. But that must weigh in him a lot. There's extra responsibilities. You know, he did that really, I think, really good and honest interview after the Warsaw game, where you saw his personality a bit more. He wasn't as kind of quiet, Reece James. Sometimes when he talks, he can be a little bit like a mouse, like, and just quite quiet. But he was pretty forthright in the interview. He said it wasn't good enough, and you know, defended the fans booing, saying, "Well, I'll be booing." It was frustrating. You know, we're frustrating to watch. So you see the captain of him come out more this season, but you see the player regress a bit, and he just needs a pre-season. He needs to stay healthy during the Club World Cup, get a pre-season, then get going next year. If he gets that under his belt, there may be an RFBL team next year, but he is playing a little bit half-cast. But I did find it odd that he played 90 Thursday in this game. honest.
I think, well, at least Tuchel's going to play him at right back or right wing back or.
I don't think Maresca's. I mean, Maresca's got some. It's a little bit like Pep. He's got these like mad ideas where he just kind of like, I'll try this, I'll try that. Reece James won't get anywhere near our midfield. Imagine when Lavia's fit and Santos comes back. When Reece James going to play in midfield? Never.
Yeah, I mean, the thing
he could
is,
just like, be covering Pep, now.
Pep, when he's playing like John Stones and whatever in midfield and stuff like this, you know, if you're winning trophies, you know, you can get away with stuff like that, even though, you know, there's issues with obviously playing that the exact setup. But if you're not winning trophies and you've only got 1 year of experience in management, you need to show the fans that you know what you're doing. And that was the difference, I think.
Warming up.
It's another player I've got my 80 on. It's my warming up is Jadon Sancho. He's starting to play well. He's starting to impress me. He's always had really good control. Like I don't know. Obviously, when you play football, when someone boots it up in the air, everyone goes touch. As in, you know, how's your touch going to be? His touch is unbelievable. It's always been his end product's been poor, but I think he had one or two shots on target in this game. You know, could have had maybe an assist. He just looks a bit better, not much better. And obviously, he scored that wonder goal against Ipswich. It got us a point, but yeah, I mean, he's improving. And at the moment, I'll probably just bench Madueke and then play him left wing and Neto right wing against Everton. And if he carries on with this trajectory, he might have a shot of being in the backup left wing next season, or, you know, in there for left wing. So he's been improving. I've been quite impressed with him recently.
He was also my woman up, Jadon. I think he made a big difference in the game. What you get, which we didn't have last season, because Sterling was there and Mudryk was there, was retention of the ball in high areas is so important for controlling the games. Sort with Madueke in the first half losing the ball. But when Sancho was on the left and Neto was on the right, suddenly winning fouls, keeping the ball high up the pitch, we're able to exert more pressure, then you can push people up. So it's really, really important for the formation for those players to be able to do that. And Sancho is good at it generally, although, like you say, his end product was poor. Seeing a bit more of the end product now, thought his passing was a lot quicker, making good decisions. So, yeah, I think he can hold his head high. I think it was a good outing for him, and I thought he contributed well to the game and put us in good shape to win it. Craig, who have you got?
My warming up is a player that was quite ineffective in the first half, but really stepped up in the second half, was Enzo Fernandez. And he's becoming sort of a man for a key moment in a game as well. You know, can pick out a pass or can create a chance or score a goal, as he did and scored the winner against Tottenham for us in our, you know, just two Premier League games ago. So I think he is growing, Enzo, and I think we've talked about this before. It's probably about his fifth time in warming up this calendar year, because he's never really boiling hot, but he is sort of the player that's on the precipice of moving into that better player category for us, which was, you know, something I think a lot of us were skeptical about to start the season.
Yeah, I thought he had a really good game, Enzo. Like you say, in the second half, I think towards the end where we're pushing people up again and we've got numbers in the box, we're really risking more. You know, in those areas, I think he's quite good because he's got a good touch and he can play the ball quickly. And I thought his pass to Neto was really well. He really found it.
Yeah,
he found him well.
It's just nice to have a player. You talked about Madueke on that right side. Pick out a player with a cross.
Yeah, exactly. It's so easy as well. Like, you can't believe how easy some people make it look. Yeah, massive.
I mean, purely from a numbers standpoint, he's got 5 goals, 6 assists this year in the league. That's goal assist every 220 minutes or so. He's got 10 assists all comps this year, 6 goals. Again, similar in terms of, I mean, it's probably dipping under to more like 180 minutes so per goal assist. And that's much better than last season. So he still struggles sometimes in games, like sometimes when we have more control, he's actually much more effective. And in those kind of basketball games, he gets lost because of his pace.
Yeah, I mean, under Posh last year, that was not a setup for him, was it?
But yeah, I mean, him and Clasado clearly have like a very good, you know, seesaw kind of partnership. You know, I'll stay, you go, that kind of thing. Clasado covers for him a lot. I mean, Clasado will cover for anyone. I mean, he's unbelievable in terms of getting the ball back. But yeah, I mean, I asked for more goals, more assists, and he's achieving it. I mean, if he carries on, he might get 7-8 league goals and the same assists. You have to say from a number 8 or 10 or whatever he is, sometimes he's kind of that. If he's kind of a hybrid 6, 8, 10, he's a bit of an odd, kind of odd the way he plays, but his numbers aren't bad. And you're just starting to see a better player. Whether we could build someone maybe different there, like a Santos there in some games, yeah, I think you could. I think you could rotate him with Lavia. Or you could definitely rotate him with Santos, but he's doing pretty well this year. He's having a better season for sure.
Quick shout out as well on warming up to Romeo Lavia, who was warming up for the whole game on the sidelines. But it is nice to see him back in the squad.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, fair play to Lavia on his day out. Wish I got that sort of treatment. How much for Lavia's ticket to the game? Where you get a full trip with the squad. You get to be named on the team sheet, and you get to sit on the bench. Good view of the game.
Really, you could make a good 25k out of that, I think, if you want to sign up for that.
Yeah. Lavia, if you're in the mood,
Lavia on the bench, because he would be good to have him for these last few.
Well, we're going to need him because Caicedo is now out for 2 games. No, suspended.
He's not
because doesn't that expire? Yeah.
No, he met the amnesty. The commentator was wrong.
Oh, was he?
Yeah, he met the amnesty, so he's fine.
There
was a game against. It was actually Ipswich. Ipswich was the game. You probably didn't notice. I think it was Ipswich. He was actually not going in for all the tackles because if he got booked that game, that was it. So he would have been out for Fulham and Everton. What's the next game? Everton. So yeah, he's fine now. He's fine for rest of the season.
There you go. Breaking news. He's fine.
He's fine.
Right, so, let's do boiling hot.
Boiling hot, reluctantly, I've got to put Pedro, and I'm joking. No, he fully deserved boiling hot for Pedro Neto. I mean, the goal itself, I mean, last week we had a warming up moment with Sancho. I mean, this was a boiling hot. I mean, what a goal. I mean, he nearly broke the net. He flew in. And I think with Neto, he does struggle sometimes where, like a lot of players, when they're one-on-one, he had a good chance before that where he kind of just side-footed into the goalkeeper. He's very good when he just whacks it. He's very good when he puts his ball through it. I remember against Southampton, he's through on goal. Rather than place it, he just whacks it. And for a left footer, it set up really well, and what a goal. But he generally had a good game. 0.29 XG. Two chances created, one big chance created. Pass accuracy was 94%, over 50 touches. 3 passes into the final third, and 4 ground jewels. I mean, that's what you get with Neto. 3 out of 9 accurate crosses. You could say that it's his crossing ability or the players that he's crossing it into, maybe a bit of both. I think sometimes the wingers are guilty of just chopping it in there when like Cucurella and Enzo and Jackson are in there, have got no chance of heading the ball. But no, he was really good, and yeah, I mean, he deserves boiling hot for the moment alone. I mean, that goal could get us in the Champions League or not, so fully deserved.
Yeah, I was going to say, reminiscent of the Pedro goal, the original Pedro goal, Everton away, in terms of sort of importance.
Good comparison, could be.
Very similar. Obviously, that was going for the league.
Also a player that we've compared him to.
Yeah. He is very similar to Pedro because he's very tricky on the ball. He can go either way pretty successfully as well. I thought that Neto, excellent. You know what you're going to get with Neto. Hard work, graft, winning free kicks, making it uncomfortable for defenders. The defenders don't want to be playing against him. He's very quick, good crosser of the ball. Shame about the people in the box. But I feel like he's going to be a top player for us, I think, for the next period of time. And I'm really happy we signed him because I think he's a real Premier League stalwart in terms of what he's been doing for the last sort of couple of years. So
you get the impression that he really cares as well. You know that
he loves
goal
it,
means
yeah.
something to him when he gets the winner. I get the impression that when we draw or lose games, that's a couple of players in our squad, not naming any names, but I think obvious who they're not thinking. By the time they're having their dinner at night, it's not crossing their mind. You know, they're switching off, they're sticking on, you know, whatever, the White Lotus or whatever they're watching on Netflix, and you know, they're moving on with their day. But, you know, I get the impression that some of these guys do actually really care. And Neto shows that on the pitch every game. So, yeah, really happy for him. Really happy that he got a winner with an actual rocket as well. Brady, I don't know if you noticed, the Chelsea commentator on ChelseaFC.com said an absolute rocket from Pedro Neto.
Thought you might have enjoyed that. I actually got Nkunku and Neto mixed up. That was a problem.
That was a genuine rocket. And, yeah, obviously fantastic for him.
Just needs a few more goals and assists. I mean, he's still over 200 minutes per goal and assist. Just need a bit more. I mean, that's a good start, but I do just want some more for him because I do think he could give a bit more. I think Chris is right. He shows some elite stuff. Show it to me a bit more, and I'll just shut up. That's just need more numbers, especially. I mean, you're right, Chris. Like when you're crossing it into like short players, like I mean, Kukure is basically our main threat in the box at the moment from an aerial point of view, which is just ridiculous. You know, if you bought an Osimhen, obviously Neto's assists will go up, but just need a bit more sometimes when he's one-on-one with goal, or just sometimes he's finishing nets him down. But, I mean, it didn't on Sunday.
Yeah, he's had, what do you have, 3 shots, 2 on target, 1 goal. It's pretty good.
4 goals, 4 assists this year.
You got to remember, this is, he hasn't, it's been minutes that have come different positions. He's playing left, right, center. Sometimes he's playing in a different style of team completely, going from having all the space in the world up, you know, to run into, to, you know, being put in a 2v1, a 1v2 basically every week. So it's just got to let these guys play.
If you're still Madueke, Neto's going to be number one right wing. That's, you know, he has had injury concerns in the past as well. Obviously, this year, as he's been really good for us, touch wood, he's been fine. If he's going to be the guy...
Estevao, Paez, Palmer, I think we're all right.
Yeah, you could put Palmer back right wing, but if he's going to be the guy at right wing, he just might need a bit more. But he's having a good 2025.
Give him better players around him.
Yeah, that's true.
Trust me.
Let's see. Any other boiling hot?
My boiling hot, I guess, we'll do a token one. Obviously, Neto's the standout, but we'll give a shout out to Tyreek George, who came on and got a fantastic goal, and just have a quick conversation about him potentially starting up front in the coming weeks in important games. You know, Nicholas Jackson's not on it. It doesn't look like he hasn't scored now in what, 13 games up front for us. Is that correct?
It's 840 minutes. You should do it by minutes. Yeah.
I don't think we'll ever drop him, though, unfortunately.
Playing up front for Chelsea. I mean, it's absolutely catastrophic, really. Especially, you know, some of those games he's played in, you know, you got to say, really, there for the taking. So, yeah, George at 19, he's a 19-year-old left winger. And he's going to potentially be, he's in the conversation to be our best option up front. You know, that,
well,
that
was, yeah, but like, you know, we've seen him in some other games where, you know, that shot he took's gone into Rose Ed. So I'm not going to get too carried away with the goal. Let's call it what it was. It was a fantastic goal, but that doesn't mean he should suddenly be playing out front. You know, if anyone can come on and
I think he's in the conversation. I think he's in the conversation.
I think he's in the conversation to replace Nkunku. That's about it.
I think he's very aggressive in decision making, and I like that because our other wingers sometimes aren't. And yeah, he can be greedy and other players moan about it. But, you know, the other side of the coin is when you're greedy, you just score a goal like that. So, not that he really had any opportunities to pass anyway. But I wouldn't start him because I think it's probably the wrong start of the season to start doing that. But you could definitely see Jackson getting hooked with like half an hour left rather than 10 minutes left and things like that. So he's definitely a good option off the bench, and maybe in some games he can start. I'm just not sure against Everton where they could really bully him off the ball and like Tarkowski like pushing him around and kicking him. I'm not sure it's the game, but we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah. Right, that's all we've got time for today then, guys. Thank you very much. Everyone's feeling buoyed after a couple of good I was going to say good results, but obviously losing to Legia Warsaw at home is poor, but the outcome was good. So a couple of good outcomes for us. Feeling buoyed for Saturday's game against Everton, where I'm sure Brady will give us a preview. Look forward to hearing about that. So thank you very much, guys.
No worries.
Cool. For more updates on all things ESL CR. You can follow us on X at Eat Sleep Chelsea and Instagram at Eat Sleep Chelsea Repeat. As always, we hope you're carefree wherever you may be. And thanks for listening.